And now it's time for the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. I'm Uncle Dennis here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz on Thursday night, May 14th, 2015. I want to suggest before we get started that you pick up a pencil and some paper and have it handy, because we got web pages, we got email addresses, we got dates, times, places, something you might want to remember, write down so that you can act on it later, because that's what this information is for. It's to spur action on your part. Let's start with some direct action training. Out in Indiana, Heartwood is going to have their 25th anniversary gathering, and that's going to happen May 22nd through the 25th, and they will be having direct action training for the first time. Here's their whole blurb. From May 22nd to the 25th, Heartwood will be holding its 25th anniversary Forest Council in Paoli, Indiana. And for the first time ever, a concurrent direct action training will also be occurring alongside the Forest Council. You'll have a chance to learn the tools of campaign strategy, various tactics geared towards stopping bad people from doing bad things, such as logging, extraction like mining, pipelines, the state, you know, all those usual bad actors. Participants in this track will learn how these skills can be used in conjunction with other campaign tactics to win. Be a good thing. Expect a lively discussion and even more hands-on experience. Pre-registration is recommended so that the trainers can prepare accordingly. To register and learn more, visit the webpage www.heartwood.org. You might be able to get some limited work, trade, and financial assistance to help defray costs. Email glaciersedge@riseup.net for more information. That's glaciersedge@riseup.net. They'll have information about that. For 25 years, Heartwood has coordinated vital campaigns for forest protection, launched dynamic new organizations, gathered activists together for education and enjoyment in beautiful places, and built a community of people across the Heartwood region to help each other protect the places they love. And heartwood.org is one place you can learn about this whole thing. Once again, they're Heartwood's 25th anniversary and direct action training. May 22nd through the 25th in Paoli, Indiana. Check that one out. And news from Sea Shepherd. They commend the Malaysian authorities on detention of the poaching vessel Perlon. In another devastating blow to illegal fishing operators in the Southern Ocean, the toothfish poaching vessel Perlon, which was boarded by Australian Customs and Border Patrol near the Cocos, or also known as the Keeling Islands, at the end of April, has finally been detained by authorities in Malaysia. It's reported that 330 metric tons of illegally caught toothfish worth around $6.5 million was confiscated from the vessel when it was detained. The Perlon is one of six illegal, unregulated, and unreported vessels known to target vulnerable toothfish in the Southern Ocean. The vessels, which Sea Shepherd calls the Bandit Six, were the focus of Sea Shepherd's 11th Antarctic Defense Campaign, Operation Icefish, which commenced in December of last year and ended last month. Of the six vessels that were the target of Operation Icefish, four are no longer in operation. As well as the recent detention of the Perlon in March, two other vessels, the Kunlun and the Viking, were detained by authorities in Southeast Asia. Then on April 6th, the most notorious of the vessels, the Thunder, was scuttled by its own captain and officers in the waters of São Tomé and Príncipe off the west coast of Africa, following a four-and-a-half-month pursuit by Sea Shepherd's ship Bob Barker. The captain of the Bob Barker, chief engineer and duty engineer, Thunder, are still being detained by authorities in São Tomé and Príncipe as investigations continue. Now we get to Bob Barker. Captain Peter Hammerstead has applauded Malaysian authorities for the detention of the Perlon. Quoting, Operation Icefish has spearheaded an unprecedented level of international attention on the illegal fishing operators and has ensured their crimes against the pristine environment of Antarctica will no longer go unnoticed. We applaud the Malaysian authorities for their action against the Perlon in what is another victory for the oceans, he said. Sea Shepherd now calls on authorities to focus their attention on the remaining two of the Bandit Six vessels, the Songhua and the Yangding. Those vessels are still at large. Captain Sid Chakravarti of the San Simon said, quoting, "With four of the six toothfish poaching vessels now out of action, we have a perfect opportunity to completely eliminate toothfish poaching from the Southern Ocean. We call upon authorities around the world to heighten all efforts to ensure this moment is seized, to focus all attention on the Sanghua and the Yandeng, to ensure that their operations are intercepted, the boats are detained, and that the waters of Antarctica are finally rid of the devastation of toothfish poaching once and for all." For more information about the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, please go to www.seashepherd.org. That's www.seashepherd.org. And their companion webpage, www.seashepherd.org.au. And the U.S. Forest Service is investigating an expired Nestle water permit from Associated Press. The U.S. Forest Service is investigating an expired permit that Nestle had been using to draw water out of a national forest in Southern California for its bottled water business. An investigation by the Desert Sun newspaper of Palm Springs found that the Nestle Waters North America's permit to transport water across the San Bernardino National Forest had expired in 1988. It's been a while, huh? Been a while. 1988, they've been operating without a permit. The water is piped across the national forest and loaded on trucks to a plant where it is bottled as Arrowhead 100% Mountain Spring Water. "Since this issue was raised and I became aware of how long the permit has been expired, I've made it a priority to work on this reissuance project," San Bernardino National Forest Supervisor Jody Noiron, or is it No Iron, told a newspaper reporter. "The process of renewing the permit requires an environmental review, which can take between 18 months and more than 2 years to complete. Environmentalists have raised concerns about the expired permit and the lack of government oversight in tracking the water being tapped during the state's ongoing drought. Nestle, the largest producer of bottled water in the United States, said it monitors its water use and the environment around the springs where water is drawn. Nestle Water spokeswoman Jane Lasgen told the newspaper that the company will work with federal officials during the permit renewal process. The Forest Service itself faces a backlog of expired permits. In recent years, it focused on high-priority projects, including permits for power lines, pipelines, and a new water supply tunnel for the Metropolitan Water District, Southern California's water wholesaler that serves more than 24 cities and agencies. Noiron said Nestle's expired permit is now a higher priority. "Now that it has been brought to my attention that the Nestle permit has been expired for so long on top of the drought, it has gone to the top of the pile in terms of a program of work for our folks to work on," Supervisor Noiron said. And thousands of non-native goldfish have invaded a Colorado lake in this story by Keith Kaufman, editing by Daniel Wallace and Sandra Mahler, World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. A handful of goldfish dumped into a Colorado lake evidently by a pet owner years ago have reproduced, and thousands of the non-native fish now threaten indigenous aquatic species, Colorado State wildlife officials said recently. Rangers in Boulder County last month detected teeming schools of the goldfish in a semi-rural lake, Colorado Parks and Wildlife spokesperson Jennifer Churchill said. The pet fish, a form of carp not native to North America, now number between 3,000 and 4,000, and state biologists are reviewing the best way to remove the invasive species, he said. "We could use electrofishing or end up draining the lake," Churchill said. Electrofishing entails dangling a live wire from a boat into the water. An electric current emitted by the device stuns the fish and forces them to the surface where they can be netted alive. The shock method was used to remove nearly 2,300 goldfish from a nearby lake 3 years ago, Churchill said. "If the invasive goldfish escape into waterways downstream, they pose a threat to native species such as channel catfish, pumpkin seed, and bluegill sunfish," wildlife officials continued. "The non-native species can be devastating to native populations by causing disease outbreaks and creating competition imbalance," said Ken Kemmerer, a senior aquatic biologist with Colorado Parks and Wildlife. The illegal introduction of non-native aquatic animals into Colorado waters and many waters in many places is an ongoing management problem, state wildlife officials have said. In addition to unwanted pet fish, some anglers dump sport fish of their own choosing into lakes, rivers, and streams. While some Colorado waters are stocked with non-native fish, they are only done so after rigorous testing to assure the fish will not upset the local ecosystem, state biologist Ben Swiggle said. Churchill said authorities are seeking the public's help in finding out who dumped the goldfish into Boulder Lake. Whichever method is used to remove the fish, he said, they will likely be fed to raptors at a local wildlife rehabilitation facility. Nice to know they're going to be useful. And poachers take advantage of drought conditions to target juvenile salmon in this story from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. California wildlife officers patrolling the Sacramento River recently cited six suspects for unlawfully taking and possessing juvenile salmon and then using the young fish as bait to target sturgeon. All of the suspects initially denied the use of salmon as bait, but wildlife officers were able to reel in their lines and show them the dead salmon on their hooks. The alleged poachers worked during the early morning hours under the cover of darkness and focused their effort on sandbars on the Sacramento River in the Yolo and Sacramento counties. The sandbars were recently exposed due to drought conditions. Wildlife officers from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife's Delta Bay Enhanced Enforcement Project Special Operations Unit and local squads continue to use the governor's drought overtime support to step up patrols in these sensitive areas to protect salmon and sturgeon from poachers. In the first case, a wildlife officer observed two subjects wading in the Sacramento River and using a large net to capture juvenile salmon near a sandbar created by the low flow conditions. They netted the small salmon for later use as bait to fish for sturgeon. The wildlife officer ultimately determined that the two anglers and one more fisherman used fishing rods baited with the juvenile salmon they'd caught. Tony Saturn and Michael Anglero and Keo Sayang, 28, all of Sacramento, were each cited for unlawful use of salmon as bait and unlawful possession of salmon out of season. A few nights later, wildlife officers observed another suspect using a hand light and a dip net to unlawfully capture and keep multiple juvenile salmon in the same area of the Sacramento River. The officers watched as a total of three suspects in that group appeared to use the salmon as bait for fishing. Officers contacted the suspects and found two of them in possession of fishing rods with hooks baited with the salmon. As the officers were conducting the investigation, a sturgeon was hooked on another fishing rod belonging to the group, which was landed and subsequently released. Officers found the group in possession of a Snapple's beverage bottle containing 14 additional juvenile salmon for later use as bait. Naipu Seichao, 36, of Antelope, and Lai Si Seichao, 27, of Sacramento, were both cited for unlawful use of salmon as bait, possession of salmon out of season, and an over-limit of salmon. Vincent Sai Pu Seichao, 23, of Antelope, was cited for an unlawful method of take of salmon. During this time of year, juvenile salmon are migrating downstream to the delta and are vulnerable to this type of poaching as they seek shelter from prey close to shore. Warden Byron Trunnell explained, "Salmon season is closed on the Sacramento River, and nets are not an authorized method of take for game fish in any inland waters." The unlawful practice of catching juvenile salmon for bait has long been a concern and is an enforcement priority this time of year. Poaching pressure on salmon is particularly harmful now given California's current drought situation. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife and numerous other agencies on both the state and federal levels are taking action wherever possible to support the long-term viability of salmon populations of the Sacramento River watershed. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife appreciates legitimate anglers and asks for the public's help in apprehending those who are taking advantage, i.e. poaching, our natural resources. If you spot illegal activity, report it through the California Department of Fish and Wildlife's California Turn-In Poachers and Polluters, also known as Cal Tip Line. That number is 888-334-2258. That's 888-334-2258 or CalTip. Or send an email or text to the wildlife officers. You can go to their website for details, which is www.wildlife.ca.gov. That's www.wildlife.ca.gov. And a forest plan has been challenged for inadequate mono basin sage grouse protections. The American Bird Conservancy, Wild Earth Guardians, Defenders of Wildlife, Western Watersheds Project, and the Center for Biological Diversity filed formal objections to the Humboldt-Toyabe National Forest over its bi-state sage-grouse plan amendment because the proposed changes to public land management do not do enough to protect the imperiled Mono Basin sage-grouse population from threats like mining and grazing. For certain activities like renewable energy developments and power lines, the Forest Service did a good job of providing strong protections for the sage-grouse and their habitat, said Eric Molvar, a wildlife biologist with Wild Earth Guardians. But the new plan amendment fails to adequately address serious threats like hard rock mining and geothermal development, which continue to jeopardize the survival of these charismatic birds. The Mono Basin Greater Sage Grouse population, located in eastern California and western Nevada, and also known as the bi-state population, is fragmented and geographically isolated from all other greater sage grouse populations. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is currently deciding whether to provide protection for the Mono Basin sage grouse population by listing it as threatened or endangered under the Endangered Species Act. The service proposed listing the imperiled bird as threatened on October of 2013, and a final decision was due by April 28, 2015, but Congress blocked funding for completing the listing rule. One factor for determining whether a species warrants federal protection is the, quote, adequacy of existing regulatory mechanisms, unquote, which include conservation actions and forest plans that guide management in species habitat. If you'd like more information about this or other stories concerning a bird, go to www.abcbirds.org. That's www.abcbirds.org. That's the American Bird Conservancy. And the United States has been sued to curb the deaths of sea turtles by the shrimping industry in this story by Barbara Liston, editing by Jonathan Kaminsky and Sandra Mahler, World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. Environmentalists seeking to curb the deaths of an estimated 53,000 sea turtles each year from getting caught in commercial shrimp nets off the southeastern United States sued federal regulators recently for stronger protections. Oceana, an ocean conservation group, is suing the National Marine Fisheries Service to force the agency to enact closer monitoring of and stricter limits on the number of turtles that can be caught and killed by the Gulf of Mexico and Southeast Atlantic shrimping industry. If people knew that their order of shrimp cocktail came with a side of government-authorized sea turtle, they would be horrified, Oceana lawyer Eric Bilski said in a statement. The Fisheries Service has estimated that 500,000 loggerhead, green leatherback, hawksbill, and Kemp's Ridley sea turtles, all listed as threatened or endangered under the Endangered Species Act, are injured in some way each year by shrimp fishing gear, according to the lawsuit. The suit filed in U.S. District Court in Washington, D.C., claims that shrimp fleets kill more turtles than all other Atlantic fisheries combined. The suit comes a year after the Fisheries Service issued an analysis known as a biological opinion, finding that the annual sea turtle death toll does not jeopardize the likelihood of survival or recovery of any of the five imperiled species. The lawsuit asked the judge to discard that opinion, asserting that the Fisheries Service made no quantitative analysis to come to that conclusion. Oceana hopes the government will compel shrimp trawlers to use so-called turtle excluder devices, or TEDs, designed to allow air-breathing turtles to escape the nets before they drown. The devices, which consist of a grid of bars attached to an opening partway down the net, allow larger creatures to escape while keeping the shrimp flowing to the bottom of the net. They have been shown to release up to 97% of caught turtles without losing shrimp, yet federal regulations do not require all trawlers to use them, according to the lawsuit. The suit also seeks to establish a turtle catch limit backed by monitoring and seasonal or area closures once that limit is reached. A spokesperson for the Fisheries Service said the agency could not comment on pending litigation. And 94 trafficked pangolins have been released into the Sumatran wilds after a massive bust in this story by Ayat S. Karakaro of Monga Bay as found on the earth first, Newswire. Following a major seizure of illegal wildlife goods in northern Sumatra, the Indonesian authorities released 94 pangolins, a sort of weird little animal, into the wild last week, including a newborn whose mother died shortly after the authorities caught up with the traffickers. Environment and Forestry Minister Siti Nurbaya flew to the provincial capital of Medan to witness the burning of 5 tons of pangolin meat, which had been confiscated along with 77 kilograms, about 170 pounds of pangolin scales, and the 94 live animals. The minister urged judges to hand down harsh punishments to serve as a deterrent. In Palembang, the capital of Jambi province, the prosecutor demanded the maximum penalty of 5 years and $38,000 fine. We expect the same for this network in Medan. At present, offenders get an average of 8 months behind bars and a fine of about $2,000. That's the reason the illegal wildlife networks stay in business, said Irma Hermawati, a legal advisor from the nonprofit Wildlife Conservation Society. Beside the newborn's pangolin's mother, 2 other pangolins died in the wake of the raid. A team of veterinarians nevertheless decided that all of the animals, even the baby, were fit enough to return to the wild. If we keep the baby first, it's not necessarily better, said Tata Jati Rasa, an official from the Provincial Natural Resources Conservation Agency. Let us release it. We believe it can survive. Let nature determine whether it will live, unquote. Pangolins are critically endangered and highly sought after in East Asia for the use of their body parts in traditional medicine and cuisine. They can sell for anywhere from $38,000 to $50,000, according to Widget Wajanardi, a deputy at the Indonesian National Police Detectives Unit. This is a driving factor pushing people into the woods to hunt, he said. We need to fight this because pangolins are a protected species. And a diverse coalition is negotiating historic ventures to reintroduce salmon into the Sierra Nevada. And this story is from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. Spring run Chinook salmon could return to the historic spawning habitat on the North Yuba River under a still developing agreement involving 3 agencies and 3 conservation groups. Working together as the Yuba Salmon Partnership Initiative, the coalition released a framework for an agreement. When completed, the agreement would create a first-ever collect and transport program in California, like those successfully used for decades in Oregon and Washington on the Columbia and Snake Rivers to move salmon around dams too tall for fish ladders. The program would return spring run Chinook salmon and possibly steelhead to more than 30 miles of the North Yuba River. Deep, cool pools on this stretch of the river provide ideal habitat for the species that summers in mountain streams before spawning in the fall. In addition, the agreement would create a program to enhance salmon and steelhead habitat on the lower Yuba River downstream of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Engelbright Dam. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife, the National Marine Fisheries Service, Yuba County Water Agency, American Rivers Trout Unlimited, and California Sport Fishing Protection Alliance released a term sheet that will guide negotiations on a binding settlement agreement that could form the basis of salmon reintroduction and restoration programs. The salmon reintroduction program, if implemented as envisioned in the term sheet, would return salmon to spawning habitat in the North Yuba River using specially designed collection facilities and trucks. This would allow adult fish to bypass 2 dams northeast of Marysville, California. The Engelbright Dam, built in 1941 to collect debris generated by hydraulic mining, and the Yuba County Water Agency New Ballard's Bar Dam, built further upstream in 1970 to provide flood protection, water supply, and power generation. The program would move juvenile salmon downstream in the winter and spring by gathering them in collection facilities above New Ballard's Bar Dam and trucking them downstream past past the dams to resume their journey in the South Yuba River to the Pacific Ocean. The reintroduction effort would focus first on spring run Chinook salmon. If successful, a steelhead reintroduction program would follow. Providing fish access to historical habitat is also a climate change adaptation strategy. The project promises to yield a wealth of scientific information that may aid other reintroduction efforts, other ecosystems, and fisheries science overall. Once implemented, it would test whether collect and transport programs can contribute to the recovery of Central Valley salmon populations, as they have contributed to the recovery of salmon populations in the Pacific Northwest. And for further information from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, go to www.wildlife.ca.gov. That's wildlife.ca.gov. And we have time for some short stories here. A rare Atlantic shorebird has won federal protection. The red knot, a robin-sized bird that makes 9,300-mile migrations, has won Endangered Species Act protection under the Center for Biological Diversity's 757 Species Agreement. This epic traveler depends on horseshoe crab eggs for the energy it needs to make its twice-yearly trips between South America and the Canadian Arctic. Thus, as crab populations decline due to harvest by fishing and biomedical industries, so does the red knot's food. The bird is also threatened by habitat destruction and climate change. In 2005, environmental groups petitioned the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for emergency protection of the species, but the agency stuck the bird on the candidate list, where it languished for nearly a decade. Now, because of the Center for Biological Diversity's agreement, the service has finalized protection for this singular bird. With the decision to protect the red knot, our children and grandchildren may just have the chance to marvel at one of nature's greatest spectacles, the marathon migration of the red knot, said the Center for Biological Diversity's Molly Madison. And their webpage, www.biologicaldiversity.org. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org. And you can listen to a rebroadcast tomorrow afternoon at 3 p.m. right here on Freak Radio. If you're in the Moscow, Idaho area, you can tune in for a rebroadcast Monday nights at 9:30 on 90.3 FM KRFP Radio Free Moscow. Or you could try going on the internet to northbysouthradio.com. That's northbysouthradio.com. They used to be Free Radio Edmonton. They stream the Earth First Update at irregular times. So tune in and see what they put us on. Or if you want more, a little more definition, you can always go to radioforall.net. That's radio4all.net, where you can listen online or download this or any previous version of the Earth First Update. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio, and as produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, I want to thank you for listening, and do tune in next Thursday evening for another edition of the Earth First Update.